is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained.
News for the Soul is now in its 25th year of broadcasting. Tune in live or visit the archives at newsforthesoul.com. That's newsforthesoul.com.
Next on News for the Soul, Your Spiritual Life with Raymond Posch.
Raymond is a life mastery coach, writer, speaker, and host of the Spirituality Beckoning podcast. His book, Awakening to Wholeness, is a record of his exploration into spirituality and his personal awakening. As an avid speaker, his mission is to share his knowledge and help others to awaken to oneness and to make a positive difference in the world. Let's welcome Raymond back to News for the Soul.
Hello and welcome to Our Spiritual Life. Before I introduce my guest, I would like to tell you briefly about my new soundcast, Evolution Unfolding, Awakening to Our Divinity. In it, I share my ongoing real-life personal story of learning to awaken, evolve, and live more consciously. I talk about my personal struggles, action steps that we all can take, my progress or lack thereof, and about steps we all can take to keep progressing and evolving collectively towards new ways of experiencing life on Earth. I think this soundcast is important. It's important that I share my story and that we share our stories in evolving. So check the soundcast out at RaymondPosch.com. I really think you will enjoy it. My guest is Patricia Albert. She is a contemporary spiritual teacher. She's author of a book called Evolutionary Relationships. So I'm going to be asking her about that. But she is also doing some remarkable things, which I think are really, really leading the way and offering great promise in terms of our human evolution, you know, our process of awakening, our process of evolving in consciousness. And what she's doing is really quite remarkable. And she's breaking ground, as far as I can tell, in the area of shared unity and mutual awakening. But before we dive into that, Patricia, say, you know, a few words about yourself and your background and how you got into this. And then we'll jump into hopefully a lively conversation.
Okay. All right. Well, it'll take more than a couple of words, but
yeah, I understand.
Say hi to everyone, and I'm grateful to be here. I'm very happy to spend this time with you. I got scooped up early on. I was 18 when I met Werner Erhard, who was the founder of EST that became Landmark. And in 1971, we really were at the forefront. We were before the forefront of the transformational kind of work that has been done for the last 50 years. So all the coaching schools came from the work that we did, and that's a huge, apparently, not just a business, but it's a huge reality in the world. Like, coaching is such a thing now.
Yes.
And so, you know, when I started to work for him, he was very kind. He had some sense that women in particular, I remember him saying women were very powerful. And he was very empowering to, you know, young women and, I mean, to everybody. But, you know, I was 18, 19, 20. I mean, you're like a kid. And the fact that I could be very effective and that I was very effective in working with people and in speaking what we were doing, I was up in front of Lincoln Center, Avery Fisher Hall in New York. And, I mean, I was flying around the country and he really just didn't have any prejudice about who you were or how old you were or anything. If you were and could speak to this and you were really living something, he was just like, you go, girl, you know, like, just make it happen. So I had 12 years of working with him. I kind of got my PhD in transformation and working with, you know, a few hundred thousand people, quite honestly. It was an amazing foundation. And then I left to have a baby and, you know, started exploring some deeper, I don't even know if it was deeper because the work that we did there was profound. You know, I mean, we would end up just standing like all together where you were just, you know, just, you'd just sort of start crying.
Wow.
The work and the impact it was having on people was just spectacular. So, but I went into a more spiritual teachings work after that and, you know, continued to do, to work with people. So I took a couple of years off to, you know, really be with my son. But then I started working. I was pretty well known. So I had, you know, a certain amount of credibility. And so I started working with people in the more spiritual domain, but it always had the foundation of the integrity and the transformational foundation, you know, that it had to really be powerful and move your life. And it wasn't just about, you know, meditating,
right,
your eyes closed. It wasn't just about that. So so I did that for a number of years, and I was very fortunate. I ended up falling in love at an ashram with a beautiful German man who I speak about in the book that I wrote, Evolution Relationships. And he was from a different world. It wasn't just Germany. I mean, he had been in India, and he was a passionately devoted mystic. Serious. You know, I mean, he was 27, paying attention to being awake and meditative from the moment he opened his eyes in the morning till the moment he closed them. He never went normal.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, he never went normal. I would be like, why don't we just go do this? And he'd be like, he would just look at me like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, you know, like it was, he was obsessed in a way, in the best of ways, in awakening. So with my background of being wholeheartedly working with people and loving people and doing the transformational work in a powerful way, and then his devotion to this sort of mystical awakened stance, who's very meditative, and then we fell passionately, madly in love with each other. You know, it was one of those twin soul connections that you know, if you're given it, it's a gift from somewhere. And so when we turn towards each other with all that energy and then, you know, the chemistry and the rest of it, I really feel like we were an opportunity for existence, like something larger to really like make something happen there. And we ended up being together for 4 years before he died in this intense awakening, which is the source of mutual awakening. So, and I'll talk about that in a minute, but you know, we just were inside the same reality. I could feel him. He was in me. I was in him, like, and we were inside something larger that was really in charge of us. Because in relationships, sometimes, you know, I'm the one who's sort of pulling and pushing and the other person pushing.
Right.
Really, it was like we just got kind of flattened. You know, we were just in that place of just hands off. And something really was moving us so powerfully into deeper realms of love and awakening and consciousness. And, you know, the sexuality was like over the moon. You know, like we were being worked and taken and refined and taken and refined. And it was the most exquisite, amazing experience I can imagine, quite honestly. I mean, and there were times where after we were together, we go for a walk outside in New York City. And I remember one time, like, I want to just grab people up the street. I wanted to be like, do you understand? You know, I felt like I was like, oh my God, you know, there's a world of depth and beauty and unity that is so gorgeous, that is so sacred, that is so much more important than anything you could possibly be paying attention to. You know, like I wanted to find a way to bring everyone in because it was like we were in heaven and it wasn't just a moment. It was really 24/7. We were either in the being purified or we were in the midst of going further for 4 years. And so that was profound. I mean, that was like when people have spiritual awakenings and they go into a cave and they're meditating and then they just kind of get blown out and they're like in a state for a long time. This was dual. That was the thing that was so unusual because I never wanted to have that other kind of awakening. He did, but I just, that was not what motivated my life. And this was just pure love and seeing into a realm that was what I feel is actually our future. So when he died, you know, it was pretty brutal for me. And something you never get over, you know, I mean, because I had a, besides that I loved him, I had a playmate, you know, I mean, like we were both equally intense and equally happy to reside in the world that we were in. So I, you know, had that happen and then I had to recover and raise my young son and, you know, and I kept working with people and working on their lives and doing all kinds of modalities, you know, to work spiritually and transformatively with groups of people. But I never thought that what we had experienced, there was nothing to do with it. Do you know what I mean? Like I wasn't moved to say, okay, let's all go here. And about 20 years later was when I got to a place in my own teaching where I kept feeling like, I don't know if I want to keep just working on people's individual awakening in life. I love people.
Right.
But one thing that was kind of going, you know, like I wasn't as inspired about that. And I had been for decades.
Right.
And I'm going to retire. I was in my 50s and I thought, I don't know what's going on here. And then I started to see that maybe what we had shared, and we were not too enlightened people to begin with, you know, we were fairly normal to, you know, not perfect. And I thought maybe all this individual work is not the whole point. And so I trust myself, like I do things out on the edge and I don't need a whole lot of agreement from the world. I don't really care what the world thinks usually. So I'm fortunate, you know, that I can
inspire
instead of saying, what are you crazy? What do you know? So I got a group together, you know, people trust me and they knew something good would happen. And so I got about 23 people a long time ago, 14 years ago. And I designed it so we could work inside the realm of what Peter and I had shared. But it wasn't about them having a love affair. It was about what could happen if I had 22 people who turned towards each other the way Peter and I did. There was some way that we were together and we were turned towards existence and each other and the truth and whatever. And that's what ignited the whole thing. Like something was made possible by how we were being. And so we worked in that way and something started to open. And it was beyond individual work. People were having breakthroughs and things were really happening, but we were also coalescing. Like there was a certain kind of congruence and it was beyond like just an amazing group because I had taught like 200,000 people in groups. So I know the potentials of groups. I know how terrible they can be. You know, I mean, they can be both amazing and just like, so this is different. And so I continued and I felt like for the first time too, like I'd never wanted to write a book. I didn't care about being a thought leader. You know, I was 18 when I met Werner. I mean, I had been fairly famous and, you know, felt very fulfilled, you know, for 12 years. And the work that I was doing, like it wasn't about something that I needed. And I was moved because I thought this is original, this is important, this is a little heretical, you know, like I'm being a bit of a heretic here. You know, I'm pointing to something beyond personal growth and individual awakening. And and it's beyond, you know, religious stuff and science put together and all the stuff that everybody was really busy with. I was just kind of like, eh, you know, like, it's fine. Yeah. But I was inspired. You know,
I have to say here, you have a remarkable story. It really is totally unique. I've not heard a story from anyone else before about such a deep relationship, a deep spiritual experience as a part of that, and what that has all, you know, led you to do. It's really amazing. Did you start 14 years ago? Did you call that Evolutionary Collective?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, that's the name of your business or company?
The name of the work is the Evolutionary Collective, and then within that we teach the practice of mutual awakening. There's an Evolutionary Collective core, so there's a core group that is really embodying this as a unitive body. It's different than a group, and that was my main drive, and it still is. I mean, we have an outreach where people can practice online 1 to 3 times a day at this point, doing the awakening. So it's very accessible, you know, it's kind of like, and we have people from all over the world practicing together, which is very moving and very powerful, I think. I would like to have tens of thousands of people doing that, but, you know, we aren't quite there. But the deeper work in the core is where it's innovating, because it requires, it's not an individual. I don't like come up with my individual creativity. I'm inside and a part of something larger, just like I was with Peter, only this is with, you know, 50 to 70 people. And the depth of who's there and the way in which we are seeing things and the way people's lives are being transformed is, it's amazing and unusual. And as a person who helped people with their individual lives, I'm like thrilled, because there's even like issuelessness. Like, there's a quality that when you're inside this and you're inside this larger circuitry, it was like Peter and I were never separate once we finally came into that unification with each other. I was still me. I was more me than ever. He was still him. He was more him than ever, but we weren't separate.
Mm.
So we have a larger body. We're in this larger circuitry of connection. You're not just waking up by yourself every morning. You're inside something that's actually moving you, and you're moving it, and it's there. Like, you actually know you're not alone, and it's not just because you have people that you feel connected to. And it's, you know, there's a quality we were sharing, because I just moved, and it's just been, you know, challenge after challenge of stuff, and the world is very challenging.
Right.
An issue, which is really different, because in the individual realm, you're always working on your issues, you know, kind of like our stuff. Mm-hmm. And this way, there's something that doesn't relate to existence in the same way. It's very, very different, and there's a different kind of lift and energy.
Well, let's explore that a bit. Yeah, I've attended some of your webinars, and you know, I'm getting an understanding of what you do, and it's very unique. And there's many things I can say about it, but let's kind of start with, you know, what exactly is shared unity and mutual awakening, as you use those terms, and why are they important?
Great question. Okay, so mutual awakening is what I experienced with Peter. So normally, awakening is individual and it's subjective. Subjective means, so, you know, Raymond, you're in your world. Most of what we've learned, most of what all the trainings are about and all the teachings are about is, how do I close my eyes? How do I tune into my inner world, which is my subjective world? How do I sense my sense of embodiment? What are my feelings? What kind of subtle energies are moving? Am I connected, you know, vertically? Am I, you know, but it's all about you kind of going into your world, your bubble, so that you can become more awake within that. And it goes from, you know, sensing your body all the way to your connection to a non-dual awakening. You know, being able to let go and have the experience of unity, but it's an individual non-dual unity. Because you could be completely in unity, and I'm sitting next to you thinking about, you know, where am I going to go to lunch? So right. It's not, right? You know,
right.
You might be experiencing everything as one, but, you know, I'm out here going, you know, thinking about buying a couch, which is probably true for me. So all the work that can be done on the individual level and all the practices and all the put your tongue on the roof of your mouth and tune into your cough center and, you know, work with your chakras and, you know, all shadow work and, you know, Almas's work and human design and past lives and none of that, you know, like therapy, all of that is subjective.
Right.
And we honor, you know, one of the things that we learn to respect there is I have my reality and you have yours. So you would never say to me, Patricia, this is what you're experiencing. I would be like, well, wait a minute. You know, like, how do you know? You know, I'm in here. You're not, you know, you can be compassionate. You might be able to see something, but you're not in my world. You can see that having 8 billion people who are living in their subjective worlds, whether those subjective worlds are really distorted or pretty clear and awakened, it's a kind of unworkable design.
Right.
If we have 9 billion and 10 billion, it's going to be not better. I don't care how many, you know, trauma summits people go to. It's not going to work on the planet to have so many people in separation and in their own subjective world, right? So we're hitting some kind of crisis point where it would make sense if evolution is real, that it would start to go, okay, gang, you know, we're moving to a different way of being human and a different consciousness. It has to be, you know, otherwise we will probably go the way of the dinosaurs. So, you know, evolution has a big range, you know, so subjective individual awakening is one thing and all of the practices that are devoted to that and mindfulness, et cetera. Mutual awakening was what happened with Peter, where we turned together and somehow we entered into the same inner reality that included his experience, my experience, and something greater that was ever revealing itself with more dimensions and more depth and more beauty and more power. So it was like we fell through a portal together, which is the way. See, anything you do individually is subjective. So there's no shared unity there possible. Even if we're all meditating together and we're having a great meditation, you're still in a different meditation than I am, generally.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So this is, how do we open our eyes and how do we find our way in and what do we listen to and what do we orient towards so that, boom, we're inside an intersubjective reality. It's a shared reality. And the veils come off. You realize that in the individual world, there's so many veils, we can't see each other. You know, there's projection. We have ideas about who other people are. We literally live in our own world. And it's more obvious than ever. Yeah. So with this, there's something about the nature of evolution where the veils come off. Like all of a sudden you're like, whoa. And then it isn't a mystery and it always feels kind of magical where you're like, oh my God, you're in the same, we're together. And then we're looking around and we're actually in the same inner world that also includes all levels of reality. And then you start to be taken and you can feel that whatever that is, it actually starts to change you. You know, you start to get your ego and your sense of separation starts to get peeled off.
Mm.
So when I teach Mutual Awakening, I teach the dynamics and that there's a different source to it. It's like evolutionarily, there's something that Peter and I touched into, but only now that it's beginning to be given to humans who are willing to pay attention in the right way. It is here now. And I can, if someone says, I'm willing, and they're willing to come and take the time and learn and hang in there, I can take them through so they experience shared unity, they experience the mutual awakening, they experience the sense of separation. That is reliable. We know how to do it. We do it every day. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's real. And we just, it's hard to get people to be less fascinated with themselves.
Yes.
Doing stuff that's been going on for decades. You know, usually people just stay inside the flows of whatever's going on. And, you know, my karma is to be at the beginning of things, which is always wonderful, but it's also annoying because nobody gets it.
Right, right.
Like, people are like, well, yeah, but you know, what are you talking about? So mutual awakening is the vehicle, the practice for moving into shared unity. Shared unity is this intersubjective space, which is a different sense of reality, and it's a different source of identity. So the thing that changes is where you get your sense of self from is starting to be sourced by evolution itself. It's like you're almost being lifted by what's coming in from the future instead of all the karma and the trauma and the what your parents did and your, you know, blood-driven, you know, you have addictions because your grandfather was an alcoholic. And I mean, there's so much weight in the individual incarnational way of working.
Yeah.
Even though your soul is pure, it's like hard to get there sometimes. This is being sourced in unity as unity, and there's a different quality. And this is an assertion. This is not something I can prove. I do feel that the human beings that will come, that maybe are coming, the babies and stuff, they're going to be wired differently. My sense is they're not going to be as rooted in all of the momentum of that kind of being human, and that they will experience, you know, just like what is it, kids that have Asperger's, they can't lie. Like, you can't teach a kid that has Asperger's to lie. Or is it Asperger's or it's something else? But there's a neurological thing where, you know, they don't like know always how to get along with people, you know, the way we want, but they can't lie. Like, they don't understand lying. If you try to explain it to them, they can't do it.
Yeah.
He's not wired for it. And my sense is that eventually, you know, just like humans, you know, there were Cro-Magnon men and Neanderthals, and we will look like Neanderthals.
Yes, I hope you're right. I absolutely hope you're right, because we are, we have so far to go in the level of consciousness.
And we've been doing that for 6,000 years. So you have to think design. It's like a leap in the design is part of what is evolutionary.
Yes. Well, you are throwing so many things out at us that, you know, we could talk about many, 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 many different things, but I would like to kind of take this in a certain direction, and definitely about evolution that you were just speaking about. Let me just kind of stop here for a moment, though. Why don't you say a few words about your book, Evolutionary Relationships, and how that relates to what you have just been talking about?
Yeah, I wrote the book, when did it come out? Came out 6 years ago. So there's more. I got to write another one, you know, when I'm done, finished with my move back to New York City. That's my plan, is to write this book. But Evolutionary Relationships, Unleashing the Power of Mutual Awakening is mostly about the mutual awakening, which is really the first place to kind of dive into anyway. And I speak a bit about Peter, and I speak a bit about what mutual awakening is, why it is. And then the chapters, there are 8 chapters devoted to the activating principles of mutual awakening. So once you learn how to do the practice, each activating principle turns it on more. It's almost like this place where if you wanted to ask me, like, well, how were you and Peter turned towards each other? That isn't some personal thing. Like, you know, like what were the, how would I do that with my partner, right? And so each chapter is one of those activating principles.
Oh.
So it turns on the potentials of the practice, and it's pretty rich in that way. So,
all right.
Honestly, if people are interested, let me just say one thing. If they go to evolutionarycollective.com, they just go to my website.
Mm-hmm.
The thing says there's a free e-course, which is the first 4 chapters of the book, plus additional writings of mine with practices. So one of the first offerings in it. So you have 4 chapters of the book, and you also have like one of the first pieces has to do with the hidden power of longing. And longing versus desire.
Okay.
Kind of where it started. So there's a lot they can kind of get into. You know, they're like, what is she talking about? You know, they can do that for free. They can, you know, eat that up. And then if that's satisfying or at least makes them curious, they can go further.
Yes. Well, and I picked up on something that you had said in one of your I know some of your material, but yeah, go ahead and say, what is the difference between longing and desire?
Desire comes from the individual identity.
Mm-hmm.
Desires can be rooted in instincts. You know,
mm-hmm.
We have desire for social, sexual, and self-preservation, various things, right? Self-preservation can be wanting a bigger house, or, you know, sexual can be wanting to find a certain kind of partner. Longing makes you vulnerable. And it comes from a much deeper source. So longing comes from like this kind of place where you can't even express like, where is this coming from? But it's wanting, it wants like home. It wants love that it can't find here. Like there's some quality of knowing that there's a more beautiful world, or there's a really deep potential for the sacred, or something that's more than what we live normally. And when you let yourself long, you know, you really kind of go and you let that open up. It's scary because you think, well, how am I going to be okay here, given that I'm really longing for what's possible?
Okay.
You know, it's like I longed for Peter before he showed up, and I had a perfectly okay marriage. But like, I was longing for that. I knew somewhere in my heart that it was possible to love like that. You know, to be with God, you know, like it was like to be in the sacred. It's just different than having a barbecue in the backyard. You know, it's kind of like, I don't care about most of what, you know, people care about in their relationships. And I was so undone I just went, okay, I'm just going to let myself want this. It undid my life. But then when Peter showed up, you know, being handsome and, you know, mind-blowing, gorgeous man who I just could not, it was like, it was him, but he was also, the sacred came through him. It was almost like being with him and being with the divine. Yes. You know,
I have to read this Rumi quote that you had in your material that is just wonderful, and I think it's a powerful statement about longing. Rumi said, "There is a candle in your heart ready to be kindled. There is a void in your soul ready to be filled. You feel it, don't you? You feel the separation from the beloved." And I read that and wow, I was so moved. That's just incredible. But it's really, it's, you know, communicating that longing that you were just talking about.
Yeah. And that's the source of, you know, what I'm inviting people into is I'm not going to teach them how to succeed better in life with the strategies of, you know, here's the three steps to finding out how to make more money or, you know, find this or that. It's not, longing is not strategic. It renders something open. And then there's something that can find you. It's almost like you can't be found by this, by something greater, unless you make yourself available for it. And all of the work that I do, I mean, so many people go, oh my God, this feels like home. It's like, you know, this is what I've longed for. Yeah. I mean,
yes. You know, one of the things that I've come to discover is that, you know, the intention of the intelligence behind the universe, the soul of the universe, is very powerful, very deep and very loving and only good. And I think you're talking about tapping into that.
And it wants you. I mean, here's the thing. That the evolutionary part is something new wants to come into existence for humanity, for existence itself. And we're so busy with TikTok and, you know, working on our whatever, that we're not to the longing it has for you and for me to come together in such a way that it can manifest through us what is its longing to give to existence. And if we just get lost in, you know, old religious rituals and things that were, it's new. The other thing too is, and this, you know, this is me being provocative, but, you know, I also think like if I were existence, if I was the what, you know, if I was that, I would be almost insulted. Look, I gave you that 3,000 years ago. Listen to me now. Do you know what I mean? Like, get over here now. You know, like, are you kidding? Do you really think I gave you everything 3,000 years ago?
Okay. So I have to jump in here and ask another question related. It may be related to your book. I'm gathering that you probably first talked about this concept or idea maybe in your book, but about you talk about embodiment or unity body. And so expand on what you're getting at there. I know you talk about it's beyond the personal and individual.
Yeah.
So yeah, what
question? I mean, people spend a lot of time on embodiment study. You know, I mean, there's a whole way to work with the body and, you know, the physical body and embodying yourself. This is different. So, I mean, the experience that Peter and I had was obviously, you know, we were close physically and made love all the time. And, you know, there was that level of the body, but we were, I don't know, it was weird. It was like we were embodied together. Like I could always feel him and it felt like we had like one body, even when he was in Germany and I was here.
Mm.
And there was a difference sense of senses. I mean, the senses were heightened and different. And in the experience that we have in the core, especially when people go deeper and we have this sort of 24/7, you know, sort of being inside something together, even though we, you know, we don't meet all the time, you feel so awake and so connected, almost like, you know, like when you wake up with a lover and you're making love the night before and you're just kind of still with each other in a certain way. You go to have coffee or something, you're still very together.
Okay.
There's a quality of that. It's more than that. But there's a quality of this intimacy and connection and being incredibly awake. Like when I walk out in the streets, like I feel so transparent and alive to everything that's happening. And it's all just flowing through me. It's not like I'm so sensitive that I can't deal with the streets of New York. It's very different. So there's a different sense of embodiment in this unitive.
Yes. Okay. So, and so with you and Peter, it was a shared unity of the two of you. And it was so much more, so much deeper because, you know, it was, I use the word wholeness a lot. And I've done a lot of research into wholeness, but it's wholeness, body, mind, and spirit, just totally alive and totally united.
So here's the thing that's unusual, and maybe you learn how to do the practice, you'll find it, is there's something that goes beyond that. It's like it's beyond, you know, head, heart, belly, you know, embodiment. There's something more that starts to come alive, and the sense of being intimate and really connected to everything coming from the shared unity. And it's natural. Like, you can't not experience it. It's not like you're trying to remember to be mindful. There's something that's just there. So anyway, you have to.
Okay. One of the things you talk about is post-personal work and moving beyond self-actualization. And, you know, I think in a lot of my podcast episodes over quite a period, I've talked a lot about awakening. And I've not used the term mutual awakening, but I've been able to see there's a awakening that's got to be at a much bigger level, you know, humanity as a species level eventually. But, you know, so, and the work that you do with groups, I think definitely is that. Where are you coming from when you talk about that kind of work? What are you pointing to?
When I'm pointing to
post-personal work and moving beyond self-actualization.
In the course that I teach to bring people into the mutual awakening, I speak about the different thresholds of unity. And individual work that we've been doing for 6,000 years plus is all personal and relational, right? You know, you're working subjectively, as I said before. It lives in the realm of the subjective. It's all about me and my root chakra and this thing and that thing. Is post-personal means you're willing to start to, it doesn't mean you're perfect, doesn't mean all your stuff is healed, but you're willing to turn with others to come into this mutuality, to come into this awakening that is embedded in unity. It's not created by you and me. It's already there. And by turning towards each other, we're like lifted into it. When you're in that, there is a purity. It's really wild. Like, people feel innocence, and there's love, and there's intimacy and depth. And it doesn't even seem to have the light and dark in it. Do you know what I mean? It's not that it's like positive and, you know, unicorns and rainbows at all. But it really isn't made of this denser duality that we're used to. And when you're more and more plugged into that, more and more plugged into that, more and more experienced self-flowing through there with others, you get less interested in your story. You know, the me project is kind of endless. And you and I are old enough, right? You know, we have friends that are older than us, and they're still working diligently on the me project and the me awakening project. And it's like, you know, Einstein said you have to go beyond, you know, in order to solve the problems at the same level you created. I can guarantee you, if you stay inside the personal me project, there's no ultimate liberation.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like, you know, and so eventually I've watched people, the more they practice and the more they experience the lift and the depth and the nourishment of being connected in a different way, it's just, you know, what you have to say to yourself in your head, like all of that just starts to be less interesting. And you're just like, whatever, you know, like it just kind of starts to like go, bleh.
Yeah.
Spontaneity, and you're not like examining everything under the rock of everything. Well, what does this really mean? And why did I do that? And where did that come from? It's just kind of like, you know, like fine, whatever, you know, and you start. Yeah. I'll give you an example. So Greta Thunberg, who you've probably heard of, she's the, you know, she's about ecology. She was 14 years old. She sat outside, you know, in Sweden, I think it was. I can't, one of those countries. And when you listen to her speak, she's gotten pretty well known. She's now like 18. Have you heard of her? Greta Thunberg? Yeah.
Yes. Uh-huh. Sure.
And she says she has Asperger's and she doesn't really like people. And, you know, that's why she is the way she is. But I don't think so. I actually think she's she's coming from a different place. So, and you can hear it in her voice. She speaks with a kind of authority that doesn't make sense. It's almost like the many are speaking through her as one in a way that she's even unaware of. And when they asked her, this is one of my favorite things. So she's a teenage girl, right? So when she was like 16, all these reporter people, you know, asked her, how did she feel about the fact that people were saying that she was unattractive and her clothes were terrible and, you know, they were sort of giving her a hard time because she doesn't ever buy new clothes and she has a certain stand about everything. And she just looked at them and you could see it in her eyes, like it wasn't registering what they were saying. And she just looked at them and she said, the rainforests are burning.
Yes.
That was her response. And it wasn't like a flippant, like if I was 16, I would have been like, you idiots, you know, that a New York attitude of like, why are you asking me something that stupid? She didn't, it wasn't there. It was like, she just stated the rainforests are burning. And you just could feel like, I want to be like that. Do you know what I mean? Like all the ego and all the attention we have on ourselves and all the worrying about the things that are so human, but so like inane. She just didn't have it. And that's what I'm moving people into, is that way of being. And I do believe that more of the young people and the children will be coming from there instead of, I want to look like Kim Kardashian.
Yes. Well, you know, what you've been talking about, I think it's bringing up a very interesting point. There's actually, I'm kind of struggling with so many ideas. How do I latch in on this? But Deepak Chopra said a statement that if you understand it, is, I think, is really deep. And that was, wholeness is wholeness. And, you know, wholeness is so total if you really get what it means. And there's not, you know, you can't break it down into bits and pieces and so on. But what you were previously talking about, you know, about moving beyond working on ourselves, our own me story, and getting to the we story, you know, or the bigger picture, you know, probably most people that are listening to this have been working on themselves, doing the inner work for years. You know, and are going to say, well, what, you know, what's wrong with that? What? But I think if you stop and think about, yeah, but are we getting to what we're wanting to get to? You know, I think all of us are seeking something greater. We're feeling this evolutionary pull that you've alluded to. Yeah, talk a little bit more about this shift away from the individual work and getting to something beyond that.
Yeah, well,
why it's important.
A lot of the people who come, you know, who find their way into the work that we're doing are people who are teaching and working with people individually. Mm-hmm. So we have regular people and we have a lot of teacher types, you know what I mean?
Right.
People. So it doesn't invalidate that. But for them, they need to keep going if they want to turn and help people even more powerfully. Otherwise, they're in the same paradigm with the people that they teach. Because if you're located someplace greater, and you know that there's a way to let go of those things eventually when it's appropriate, they have more power to be effective. And we've experienced that. You know, the people that are doing work with people are like mind-blowingly effective coming from mutual awakening and shared unity. Because it isn't the game in town. It's like, you know, you're just going to do this forever. So, you know, I do think that this is very much at the forefront. It's very much at the beginning. You know, I'm, you know, that seems to be my karma. I have relatives that have all done that sort of thing, you know.
Yes.
But it's like if people who are listening are going, I don't understand exactly what she's saying, but there's something that's like, wait a minute, what? Wait a minute, what? You know, like there's something that's catching your attention. I know the longing for evolution, it needs as many people as it can to build a greater momentum in that direction. And if you just want a sort of political reason to do it, you know, there's forces in the world in every country that are trying to take us backwards.
Yes.
And that's obvious, right? I mean, this is not, you know, hard to figure out. And we need to have as many people as possible, not just trying to bring people back to what we know, but we need pioneers. We need courageous us's, you know, people like us to go, let's go where the future is. And in my experience, on a practical note, When you connect from the depth of where I teach people to connect from, it's so far beyond what you look like, how old you are, what color you are, what you believe in. Like all of that stuff that we have as human beings is mostly just annoying. Do you know what I mean? Like we like this, we don't like that. We feel good with these people, we don't feel good with those people. All of that is not the point. Like Romeo and Juliet, like they didn't care about the Capulets and the Montagues. Like they were in love someplace that didn't include all of that.
Yeah.
When you connect at the deepest level from there as a human, you can then begin to navigate some of the separateness and the divisiveness from a real place of love and unity. Otherwise, it's just like good luck. I mean, you couldn't pay me to do work to try to get people from different factions to get along.
Yes. You know, I think some people, you know, that I can think of, Craig Hamilton, Barbara Marx Hubbard, Jean Houston, have like had a sense of where evolution is ultimately going. But it, you know, it's such... What you're pointing to is such a big leap. You know, it's hard to see that. You know, that's kind of like reading the future. But we are running out of time. Why don't you say, you know, your final words that you'd like to share with the audience and tell them again your website address. And I've so enjoyed this. I'll say more. But, yeah, go ahead and say your few words.
Thank you. And it's really been a pleasure. I appreciate where you come from.
Good.
You know, I can feel your intelligence, but there's an enormous amount of inquisitiveness and humility.
Mm.
That's really beautiful because, you know, that makes everything possible. So thank you for that. For them, mostly my last words are find out more. I mean, all I can say is there's a longing for you. You know, I'm not just trying to sell them something. I don't care. I've taught enough people. But come and go to the evolutionarycollective.com, sign up for the e-course. It should be right there. And find out more. And if you're remotely drawn to it, there is something amazing waiting for them. I mean, everybody who's like found their way through the door, they're just like, oh my God, like what, you know, I'm so glad I found my way in here. You know, it's kind of like, and I think with these days, these times, I think we need to have faith in, you know, like you go into a place where I'm inspired every day by human beings. And that carries me because a lot of the time I'm not inspired.
All right.
You know, it's actually pretty depressing to see how people are functioning to some degree. So I think we also need to be together in the right way, especially during these times.
Yes. Well, Patricia, thank you so much for being with us and sharing all of your incredible insights. I've so enjoyed this conversation, and people really need to hear what you're talking about. I think the pace of evolution is picking up. I think it's going places that, as I was saying, most people can't even imagine. And you're pioneering the way for us. So thank you for the work you're doing there. And I'm sure all of us want to learn more. Thank you again. To all my listeners, have a great day and a great life.